fun to do bad things.
That's real, yo. I'm not exaggerating at all, man. The more money you make, the more problems you get. And jealousy and envy is something that comes with the territory, man. A lot of people, it's just negative energy, like my man Puff said.
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English and what?
What?
English, mother, do you speak it?
Man, you been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Welcome to the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast.
Congratulations, you have arrived at episode 419 of the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast brought to you, of course, by ProjectSpurs.com. I'm your host, Ryan McCallum, and with me, as always, after a long layoff, December 2nd was the last time we posted the show, it's Mr. Jose Grijalva. Jose, welcome back after almost 2 weeks off.
Yeah, a lot has changed in those 2 weeks. I changed my workout routine. Now I do legs three times a day heavy. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So right now I'm absolutely dead. I'm gone.
So you're built like a triangle, right? Just huge legs, and then that's it.
I try to work the glutes, the quads, hammies, calves, you know, and everything else up top is just, you know, I move them around. It's not that important.
Did you ever watch American Gladiators? Of course you did.
Of course I did.
There's a place up here, you know, CrossFit gym called Camp Gladiator, and it's Camp Gladiator because it's a woman who owns it, used to be one of the American Gladiators, and I can't remember who she was, but it's a pretty big gym here, playing off of that name. You belong on American Gladiators.
I thought you were going to say that you've gone to that gym and then you guys work out with those sticks that they used to fight with, you know?
the pugilism, is that what it is? The ones that look – the two little like Q-tips that they hit? I think it's a pugilist. Pugilist stick? It's something like that. That'd be awesome. I feel like I would kill it on a show like that or American Ninja Warrior, but I think I'm a little too tall for American Ninja Warrior. I'd hit the water, you know what I mean? I'd scrape the water.
I don't think I've seen that.
You've never seen American Ninja Warrior?
I don't think I have.
I know what you're spending your holiday break on now. Marathon.
That's not the – is that the –
It's like an obstacle course.
But is that the Asian show, the Chinese show?
No.
With the bad lip reading?
No, that's –
You know which one I'm talking about though, right?
I do. That is Wipeout or something like that. You know, it's the American take of Wipeout.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the one that's kind of goofy where they're spinning around on. I'd do great at that too. Obstacle courses, I could kill it at, but American Ninja Warrior, I think I'd scrape the water too much. Cause they have what are we even talking about, man? Get off of this topic. Tim Duncan got his number retired last night. Obviously big news around San Antonio, number one story on NBA.com as it should be. Not really goodbye to one of the legends, but name is in the rafters now, where we knew it always belonged. But we're going to talk a little bit about that retirement ceremony and what Tim Duncan meant to the team and all of those kind of warm and fuzzy things. But the business at hand is we're a little more than a quarter through with the season. Last night, the Spurs came off 113 over to 100 win over the Pelicans, which is not surprising. They're going to enjoy that win before they head to Houston on the 20th, which will be Tuesday, and they're going to take on the Red Hot Rockets. Rockets have won 10 in a row. So despite the Spurs doing really well so far for the year, they're not running away with the division, and they're not running away with the West. They're about a game and a half behind Golden State, but they're not too far ahead of several other teams that are right on their heels. Jose, just initial takes before we even talk stats and that kind of thing. What do you think? A quarter through the season, do we think that the Spurs are where we thought they would be?
Are you talking about record wise or chemistry wise? Both?
Yeah, let's go with both. But I mean, record wise, what's your first take on that?
Record wise, I'm surprised record wise, just because, you know, replacing Tim Duncan and what he would bring to the team. If you remember that Mike Monroe interview that he graciously did for us, and hopefully we have him back. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he's hearing this. But anyways, I needed a name, drop a name, you know, name drop. I just thought the chemistry would have been a little off, especially with that center position, because even when there was a new center, Duncan would still command the paint. You know, when Rosho came in and D-Rob retired, Duncan, if Rosho messed up somewhere, Duncan had his back. Mm-hmm. And you really didn't have that this season, because Aldridge isn't that guy, and then it was really his second year this year. And before I forget, I'd like to apologize for those hearing us. I have a allergy cold something in my throat, so in case I sound weird. But I'm surprised. I thought there were going to be maybe 18, 17, 16, 15 wins, you know, maybe struggling at this point, but then getting better. But record wise, I'm happy that they're where they're at. Chemistry wise, who did they play on TV before? On ESPN.
Boston.
Was it Boston? Yeah, it was on ESPN.
Yeah, I think it was Boston.
It wasn't Phoenix.
Boston.
Okay, yeah. I forgot who said, but they said that the Spurs barely ran their first complete practice that week. Mm-hmm. So hearing that, I mean, I'm more enthusiastic, especially with – I mean, they're struggling, but I mean, they haven't even had a full practice before that. So, you know, I think the only thing for the Spurs is to build and build on it. I think – you know, it's scary that they can get that much better, especially the bench. I mean, the bench is working and, you know, giving them an enormous boost. The starters are struggling, but they're not struggling too much. But again, they could get over that hump. So I'm completely optimistic from, you know, from record wise and chemistry wise, especially that they can build on that.
I think I'm in the same boat as you, which is not surprising. I'm surprised and very happy that they're 22-5. They, from a chemistry perspective, I thought they'd be way worse for the reasons that you mentioned. And they've fit several new pieces in, and players that weren't getting a lot of minutes are suddenly getting a lot of minutes. You know, reference even David Lee's at 17.4 minutes, a sneaky 17 minutes a game David Lee is getting in the rotation. You see guys like Kyle Anderson out there. You see this odd mix, and I thought there's no way that they can keep the same pace that they did of last year, but they're 22-5 overall. That's good for the second best record in all of the NBA, which is, you know, not surprising. Golden State's in front of them, and then you got San Antonio, and then Cleveland, and a couple of other teams that are right on their heels. But a pretty solid start to the season, even a better December. And you said that they're only getting better, and they're gelling. And that there's only room for improvement. Well, they certainly have stepped up. You know, they took a in October, those couple of games, they were out to a fast start. And then in November, they dropped off quite a bit in their pacing, down to about 100 points a game. You know, this December, they're at 107.3 points per game, shooting just about 50% for the field, which is their highest field goal percentage so far this year. So that tells me that they're getting the open shot. Their assist numbers are up. They're passing up the good shot for the great shot. I'm not saying it's quite the beautiful game like we saw a couple of years ago, but they seem to be working in some kind of offense that you can't really place because it's just so odd without Tim Duncan there. But you know how they used to just stop him right there at the top of the key and swing the ball. You still see a bit of that going, but there's a little bit more. I know I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here, but you see the stars like Kawhi is getting a little bit more of the ISO ball, getting his freedom to move. And then when it's not a set play for Kawhi, it's this rotation, you know, comes in and the ball starts swinging. And that's working for them. In December, they stepped it up almost 108 points a game. So what do you think about the Spurs offense so far?
Offensively, I think it's one-dimensional, but again, for those reasons that we stated, you know, you can't put too much emphasis on Pau Gasol. Mm-hmm. I think Pau has to get comfortable really with those guys, you know, and again, he does a lot of things, but again, he's not too comfortable as far as where he should be. For an example, when they played Phoenix, there was a possession in, I think it was in the second quarter. Jonathan Simmons drove in and they stole the ball from him, and Powell was in the paint. LaMarcus was in the paint. They had, you know, they double teamed Simmons. So again, everybody was in the paint. Powell was just, he didn't really know what to do. Next possession, they kind of they went through the same play, but with Kawhi, Patty was in the corner. Patty moved so they wouldn't double. Now Gasol's at the three-point line, not really where he's supposed to be, because the Spurs really want somebody in the wing and then somebody up top and then somebody on the other wing. You know, really three shooters out there. So then they could move the ball and maybe give it to Aldridge on a quick post up. But I mean, it's little things like that. He'll get used to it. One of the things that has really encouraged me. And you mentioned him earlier, David Lee, really on both ends on the floor. The guy just moves on offense. He's if he would be a little bit taller and a little bit longer, he would be exactly what Thiago Splitter used to bring to the Spurs. Off the ball screens, just moving around, passing. And if you notice this on the defensive end, he's talking to people.
Yeah.
You know, when he gets back, when he gets back, I mean, he's yelling at somebody that, you know, so-and-so's cutting or go cover that person. That's why I wasn't surprised that Pop started him when Aldridge sat, because, I mean, he's really what the Spurs need in a sense. But again, they can't really put him in into the starting lineup unless you bench Gasol or you bench Aldridge. But, you know, he's been a pleasant surprise. I'm really glad that the Spurs picked him up.
Well, let's talk about surprises, and you talk about David Lee. I get that. He's overperforming, I'd say, from what the Spurs expect him to be. If you think about it, he's kind of filling what David West was supposed to do last year. Now David Lee is doing that and getting rewarded with, you know, 17, almost 18 minutes a game. So he's my standout surprise so far. A disappointment for me this far in the season, I'm thinking it's LaMarcus Aldridge. You know, if you look at points, you've got Kawhi Leonard leading the way, which we knew was going to happen at 24 points a game. And then you've got LaMarcus at 16 points a game. And from a rebound perspective, you've got Pau Gasol at almost 8 rebounds a game, and you've got LaMarcus at almost 7. So he's 2 in both of the I would say, the top categories. But is that superstar status, 16 points a game, 16 and 7? Is that what we were I don't know what LaMarcus' career numbers are. Maybe we should have that looked up if we had a producer on the show that could do that for us. You know, 16 and 7. That's not getting it done.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very difficult at this point. Like bringing up the point that they've only had one full practice since then. They probably had one or two since then. It's very difficult, and especially you see the starters really just timid. You know, they give it to Kawhi. Kawhi, go do your thing, and Daniel move around and try to get open somehow. You don't really see off the ball screens. You don't see guys moving around. Powell's just standing there because he knows he can stretch the floor. So, I mean, it's really basic offense for those starters. Maybe in the next couple of weeks, Pop can get them, maybe Pop can have, you know, Gasol and Aldridge on the strong side of the ball. And on the weak side, maybe you can have Aldridge set a pick for Green, and then he could cut to the basket while Danny's, you know, trying to get open at the three, something like that. You know, have action on both ends. But I really put that on the fact that they haven't had a full practice. I think they'll get more used to it, but he hasn't been disappointed. But I don't blame him, because with the thing about that is Kawhi is so versatile. He can post up, he can take him off the dribble, he can shoot. Powell can really do the same thing at that five position. Aldridge is really just a post up player, a pick and pop player. He looks really good when he's making those shots up, picking and popping next to Parker. But other than that, the offense hasn't gone through him. So maybe in the next coming weeks, Pop can come up with some plays that'll really expose the defenses and help really elevate what LaMarcus Aldridge can bring on the offensive end.
You know, another guy who is stepping up his game this year is Patty Mills. And I wonder why. Yeah, and I even hear Patty Mills referenced as, you know, in the sixth man for the year running, which would be fantastic. I think he's got a real shot. But you look at his minutes per game, for his career, he's a 16-minute-per-game guy. He's almost at 23 minutes. I think he's at 23 minutes so far averaging this year, and we'll let you say why. But points per game, he's got 4 more points per game than he's used to. He's got nearly an assist and a half at 3.5 assists. More than he has over the life of his career. Patty Mills is really stepping up his game. And, you know, I threw you a softball there. Tell me why.
Oh, because he's going to be a free agent. Of course, I think he's playing a little bit harder, a little bit smarter, a little bit better. He's shooting, you know, the same way that he can shoot. He's I really think he's worked on his point guard skills, even though he's not really a point guard. Right. I think he handles the ball better. He carries on with the offense a little bit better. He finishes around the rim a little bit better. But, you know, I really think that's really what's pushing him. And, I mean, if you win Sixth Man of the Year, where is that going to put the Spurs? Do you re-sign Patty? Do you give him a longer-term contract, and or do you let him go? I mean, I think they're going to be in that Speedy Claxton situation in 2003 where really, you know, if they let him go, it's because he asked for too much money. But, I mean, he's doing well. So, I mean, he's one of the reasons why the Spurs bench is who they are. They have him shooting and defending, and they have Ginobili doing, you know, spot-up shooting. Jonathan Simmons bringing the juice, as Paul Garcia says. You know, David Lee. I mean, these are all energetic guys that are bringing really energy and all moving around and doing different things. So, but that's really, I think, the main reason why he's playing a little bit harder than usual. He really wants that payday, and who can blame him?
Who's taking DeJounte Murray's future minutes here? Is it Patty Mills? Is it Tony Parker?
Are you asking me about next year?
Yeah, because the development of DeJounte Murray presumes that, and the fact that they're banking on him for the future, presumes that one of those guys is out of here.
Well, let me tell you what I would do. If you want him to get minutes, I would seriously, you know, get him somebody to help him gain weight and, yeah, you know, muscle. And put him at that two position, sort of like what they wanted to do with George Hill. And then, man, I'm going to butcher his name. Then if you could let Patty Mills go and then keep the RG LaPravatola. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he could come off the bench, or he could start, and then Parker and Murray can come off the bench. That'll really give you a dimension offensively and defensively of a long, quick guard on both ends of the floor. And then, you know, Parker could sort of pick up some, you know, manage the offense a few possessions. He can manage the offense a few possessions. But really, I mean, if you want him to get minutes, you got to let Patty go, I think. And then that leaves really room, because I don't think Manu will be here next year. So he could really take that six-man role. And next to Jonathan Simmons, you know, that would be a crazy defensive lineup also coming off the bench next season.
So out of the familiar faces, your Tonys, your Manus, your Danny Greens, of course, Kawhi, LaMarcus, where does that leave that next wave? I mean, you're sort of intimating it there that DeJounte Murray is going to be part of that next wave, perhaps next year. But you've got guys like Bertans, who's playing in a lot of games, played 22 games for these guys so far. And, of course, you know, your guy, not my guy, Kyle Anderson, is at 20, you know, killing everybody with a bag of nothing. 24 games so far this year, 2.5 points a game. Is the evolution of Kyle Anderson over, and is this right where he's going to be? And do you think that he is a part of the – I'm asking like 15 questions here in a row. Do you think Kyle Anderson's a part of this thing moving forward? And what do you think about the maturation of that next wave of Spurs?
You know, just thinking about LaPravatola, DeJounte Murray, Jonathan Simmons, he's going to be a free agent also. Who knows what he might command? And Bertans, I like that. They would be incredibly energetic off the bench. I think you could run the beautiful game style type with those guys, because they won't be afraid to make that extra pass. But as far as Kyle Anderson, you know, he's a nice guy. Remember, don't forget that. But I think he really reached a ceiling. If I were him, I would. You know, I get what he's trying to do. You know, he's really trying to play that point forward position at the three. If I'm him, if he wants to stay in the NBA, just gain weight, gain muscle. You're not going to get any quicker, but I mean, with his point guard skills, he could be a really good four if he's strong enough to do it, sort of like Diaw. And I think that's where he's losing his perspective on this. He's trying to be a three, a point small forward, when he should be a point power forward. And really, you know, his speed wouldn't really matter, because he can keep up with the bigger guys. So where does that leave him? If it was me, I would let him go or trade him. But he needs to really find himself and not be content with really how he's playing right now.
You know, I gave you some rebound numbers previously, and I want to go back to that real quick, because the Spurs have always been a really good rebounding team, really good defensive team. If you look at the defensive rebound totals for this crew, we're leading the way with Pau Gasol at 6.4 defensive rebounds per game. LaMarcus, of course, is second right above Kawhi at 4.8 and then Kawhi at 4.7. Defensively, it just seems like they're missing that defensive star. Do you think that, you know, they're winning, right? And I don't want to look at Gift Horse in the mouth. They're 22-5. They're off to a fantastic start. But have they lost their edge defensively? I mean, without Tim Duncan, has that just changed them from a defensive perspective, especially in the post?
Are you sort of indirectly talking? Did you read that article about Kawhi, about how he's so good defensively he makes the Spurs bad? Did you read it?
No.
It was by CBS.
Uh-uh.
No, some writer from CBS Sports. It was basically that he's so good that whoever he's guarding, they take him out of the offense, mm-hmm. and then everybody else tends to start scoring, which makes sense. You know, a lot of Spurs fans got insulted, I guess, by that title. You know, whoever wrote it put that title so they could get clicks. I mean, you know, just admitting it. But I mean, that's a valid point. Do I think they lost their defensive edge? No. When you see them defend, I mean, they're really trying. The problem is now, to the point of that article, and also if you go in Basketball Breakdown, B-Ball Breakdown on Twitter, they put up YouTube videos explaining certain situations. And I mean, they even talked about this. It's really getting to the point where the Spurs are coming in with a game plan. And let's go back to that Chicago game, because I think that's the easiest one to break down. They had Kawhi on Jimmy Butler for obvious reasons. Why? Because, again, you know, Kawhi is their best defender. Jimmy Butler is their best offensive player. So, again, you're trying to neutralize it. And what do? They go through Dwayne Wade. They go through Rajon Rondo. Kawhi gets a little bit, you know, bored out there. So he tends to play off Jimmy Butler, play off Dwayne Wade when they switch. And then, you know, they start scoring. They're really making the top player that Kawhi is guarding the decoy. I think they can easily fix those problems just by going with the Bruce Bowen theory. I guess I don't know if you want to call it a theory. I call it that when I teach my kids, you know, just so they don't think I'm coming up with crazy stuff. And that's putting their best defensive player on the other person's best offensive player to let your best offensive player rest. In this sense, I really think the best way to fix that Spurs defense and you know, the problems that are going along with it is making Danny Green your Bruce Bowen. Make Kawhi your Manu Ginobili. Don't let Kawhi get too tired on the offensive end. Even though he might be your best defender, he's your best offensive player. And at the same time, you don't want Kawhi to be wearing out at the end of the season. So I think that's the only really way, the best way to fix all those problems. Because again, when you go in, again, that example with Jimmy Butler, the defense is focusing on Butler. Kawhi's focusing on him. The help's focusing on Butler. And then everybody else is just, you know, getting a free pass because the defense isn't prepared for that. When you move like a Danny Green to that spot, it'll help Kawhi play as a help defender. It'll help him rest, and it'll help the defense stay on that one guy. Because again, if you move Kawhi to Rajon Rondo, Rondo's not going to really do anything. If you move him to Dwayne Wade full time, he's not really going to do anything. They're really still going to have to go through Butler. So the best way to really keep up with that game plan and get better on defense, I think, is really to put Danny Green in that situation. I don't know if that made sense.
No, it did. You know, I'm looking. Yeah, I mean, it did. My concerns are just in tracking pure numbers here. There's been a dip. There's been a significant dip. I thought that's what we were going to get from LaMarcus, and I hate to just hone in on this one guy, but the underperformance I think is evident. If they had a stopper there, and I don't know if I was depending on him for that to fill in with those Tim Duncan shoes. It didn't really happen. And so I feel like while they're off to – I hate to be the negative guy here, but they're off to a great start. They're doing really well. Keep the momentum going. But I feel like they're going to get found out. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, to sort of you know, stick a Rodgers in that sense. I mean, he's really a system player. You know, Tim Duncan was really never a system player. Even though they would put him in a system, he knows that if there was a weakness at this, you know, with his coverage in this one area, he would figure out how to, you know, how to patch it up, how to cover it. So, I mean, Duncan would think out of the box. And I think Aldridge is not that defensive-minded player. I think he's a really good defender, underrated in some areas, but he really relies on the system. And again, putting Kawhi on the best player and then Pop telling them, hey, you guys – in the paint, the big guys, you go and help him if they get by him. I mean, that really leaves the weak side vulnerable, the other side that he's not supposed to be covering. So again, I think that'll help the big guys also, because they're going to be focusing on the best players, and really Kawhi can really help out in that other sense, because really Kawhi's like Duncan. If you've seen him on the help defense, he's smart enough. He knows how far to play. He knows how long he can reach, and he knows when to commit to the help. He doesn't really leave his guy wide open with nobody else helping him. So I really think that that's the best situation. If they go with something like that, I think you'll see improvements everywhere.
Okay. Well, 22-5, they're about 33% done with the season. So off to a great start. You know, I'm sure.
Can you tell that I'm trying to get a job at with the Spurs coaching staff?
It sounds perfect. It sounds really, really great. I think you're a shoo-in. But let's talk about Tim Duncan. 19 seasons in the NBA, all with the Spurs, obviously. 5 championships, 2 MVP seasons, 15 All-Star appearances, 10 all NBA first team awards, 3 finals MVP, MVPs. He's part of the winningest threesome in NBA history. And his jersey went up into the rafters last night, sitting right next to Bruce Bowen. And, you know, for some reason, when that jersey goes up there, it looked really out of place. I don't know if you got that feeling as well. But, you know, you look up there and you see, like, David Robinson, and then you see Tim Duncan, and then you see, like, Bruce Bowen, as great as he was, and you see Avery Johnson, as great as he was. I'm thinking, two of those things are not like the others there. What are your impressions of Tim Duncan's jersey going up there into the rafters? And I don't know, it just seemed odd. Tim was so great that being there right next to Bruce Bowen, it just doesn't seem like it fits. Do you know what I'm getting at? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
You wanted him in the middle, basically, right?
Well, it's like it could be in the middle, but it's like if Tim is up there, equal stature with Bruce Bowen, is that right?
You know,
with Avery Johnson, does that feel right to you?
You know, that's what I was thinking, and I forgot who was who said it. I don't know if it was Andrew Monaco or what's the other guy's name? Yeah, oh, never mind. I have it at the tip of my tongue. You know, it's not that I forgot. It's just for some reason I can't say it. Rick Renner?
Oh, yeah, yes. Rick, the hair. I don't know. Rick Renner.
Yeah, I don't know which one of those two said it. But really, they were talking about Avery Johnson and Bruce Bowen. And they were saying, you know, those guys were the glue. You know, they really kept, you know, everything together. I would say yes to an extent, because – you know, when you look at Bruce Bowen's career, and what I mean by career, not the stat sheets, I mean, look at him play, look at the defensive, you know, everything he did on defense. He really elevated the big three. Because if you take Bruce Bowen out of there, and, you know, in 05 you start, I forgot who was the one with the headband? Devin Brown. You know, he got, you know, a lot of notoriety that year.
Yeah, he went to UTSA, right? Devin Brown?
Yeah. I mean, you start Manu Ginobili and then Devin Brown, or you start Brent Barry and Manu Ginobili. I mean, as good as those Spurs were, I don't think they would win a championship. Or even if they did, I don't think they would last, you know, at least a full season without getting some sort of injury. Back in 07, if it wasn't Michael Finley and Bruce Bowen starting, would it be Michael Finley and Manu Ginobili? How would they have handled it? I think Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Tim Duncan are one of the greatest trios ever. I'm not putting them down. But the fact that Bruce Bowen took a lot of heat off of them, a lot of burden off of them, and real Tony Parker too, because Bruce Bowen would switch on to Chris Paul, and he'd switch on to Steve Nash. Bruce Bowen would switch on to Kobe Bryant and T-Mac and Vince Carter. You know, I think he really elevated their play to a super elite level. I think they would have still been elite without him, but they really made the big three who they were, because – you know, he basically said, best player, doesn't matter what position, I'll guard them. And again, in 2006, I mean, Tim Duncan was hurt, plantar fasciitis. They were playing the Dallas Mavericks. Who guarded Dirk Nowitzki? Bruce Bowen. So, you know, I really think Bowen really kept that team into an elite level. You know, you take him out, you replace him with somebody else, a Rajah Bell back then who was a defensive minded. I don't think it would have been the same team. So absolutely Bruce Bowen. Avery Johnson, I'll let you take that one, because I can't make that much of a case. Well, he was a little general, right?
Well,
you know.
Okay, so you're a fan favorite. I guess I get that, and no doubt about Avery Johnson that way. But you know, one day, Tony Parker's, you know, jersey's going to be up there. And would you say that the contribution was equal You know what I mean? And I know that's not what this is about. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but you know, I look at Avery Johnson's commitment to the Spurs versus a guy like David Robinson or Tim Duncan, you know, or Gilmore, or you know, and you look at this, and then you string all those guys together, and it just you start seeing some stratification in the, you know, in the players that have their names retired in it. It just putting Tim Duncan, one of the greatest players of all time, and then David Robinson, one of the greatest of all time, any team, you know, up there, and with some of these other guys, it just I'm not saying it diminishes Tim Duncan or it elevates those other guys. That was one of the first things that I noticed was, man, Tim Duncan's name in a Hall of Fame retirement, you know, jersey retired for the Spurs, all those kind of things. I look at that and that really fits. It really sounds good. It's a great end of the story. And it makes sense. And then you look immediately to his left and you see Bruce Bowen. I mean, dude, somebody else is wearing his number right now. Right. You know, it's like you and then you see Avery Johnson next to him. It just seems like some of these things just don't add up anymore.
Well, you know, the best way I like to sort of at least look into it or at least try to make sense of it is look at what they brought to during those teams in that era. Because, I mean, if you start comparing like Tony Parker and Avery Johnson, I mean, it's not really a fair contest there. But if you start comparing what Tony Parker has brought to the Spurs ever since he's been here. He's been there, and you know what they needed, and really how he was playing. Like Ginobili, you know, Ginobili probably wouldn't be retired with any other team, or you know, people talk about his Hall of Fame status. Should he be in the Hall of Fame? But in San Antonio, you look at everything he's done, the type of player he was, the type of player he still is. Not only just player, but you know, outside of the court, you know, all these guys help out the community. I think that plays a huge role with San Antonio too, because the team and the city are so close together. But at the same time, you know, Ginobili was also a player. You know, what did the Spurs need? Well, they needed him to come off the bench. You know, any other player would have probably said no, but I think that also elevates what Ginobili has done, because he helped them and he helped bring what they needed, even though it probably wasn't the best for him personally, because he probably could have gotten $20 million, you know, somewhere else. But you know, I just think it's the situation. What do they bring in that situation? I love Bruce. You got to realize that I'm partial in this, because I'm not a great basketball player. I'm not even good offensively. I'm streaky. I'm a streaky shooter, but I was always known for those corner threes. I would always relate to Bowen. I'm 5'5", but I was trying to be that defensive specialist because I couldn't be Kobe or Jordan. So I'm kind of partial to Bruce. I love Bruce. I've never met Bruce, but I love the guy. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm trying to take something away from him. Maybe I am, but it just looking at Tim Duncan, it's like there's even classes of, and this is any sport probably, right? You get your name retired and you're, you know, considered that team's all-time great. There's 1,000 reasons why you could be, you know, listed in a ring of honor or have your jersey retired. But then even in that elite grouping of players, which you think of how many players have come through San Antonio, and there's only, was there five up there? Six up there? Is that right? How many players are up there now?
Well, you just named them all. Who was it? Gilmore, Gervin, Moore. That's three.
Yep.
Robinson, Johnson, five.
Bruce and Tim, seven.
Bruce, Tim. Yeah, around
that's
seven.
That's such a small percentage, right? Whatever it is. It's
Sean tight. Elliott, eight.
Oh, Sean Elliott. So there's eight. So this time, yeah, how do we forget that guy? There's eight. So it's such a small sample size, and even within that elite group, you look at guys like David Robinson, Gervin, Duncan, and then they're the elites out of those eight. And then you look at those three, and they're still Tim Duncan is still the top. It's just odd to see his name in equal status with the rest of those guys.
Well, I'm getting this from you, but there's one guy who I don't think he's going to get his number retired. But I really think he should, because he was talked about possibly being the MVP in 05. He was I think he really, again, like Bruce, elevated the Spurs. He really changed the way how they would play. I think Robert Horry should get his number retired in San Antonio.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get to. Yes, things like his name came up too. I totally agree with you. If you think of if Avery Johnson got his number retired, right, and then you want to talk about contribution to winning, right? And winning in the playoffs, and this is a championship team. It's been that way for a decade and a half, right? Well, yeah. Longer than that, 22 decades, right? As long as Tim's been there. People who have directly impacted the future of that team. You're right, Robert Orr is there. I mean, he's there just like Sean Elliott's there. I mean, if you start thinking about Avery Johnson and say, okay, what was his direct contribution to winning? Well, then you start putting in people like Mario Elway, right? You start putting in guys like that. It just seems very – I mean, not in the Hall of Fame, but you say contribution to winning. They were both on that team. They both did some stuff.
One of the reasons why I think it really bumped up Avery, he hit a shot, right? He hit what did he do? Did he clinch the championship on that baseline?
Yeah, yes.
On the long two?
Yes.
Well, or he hit the game-winning three right in game six. Was it game five, I think? Right. Yeah, so that's what I think should be the criteria on that. The guys that made you special and the guys that helped you win. I mean, as much as I loved Brent Berry, because, again, he was that versatile. He could play one, two, and three. Mm-hmm. He could do a lot of things. He wasn't really a direct contributor to a championship. He helped make them solid, but he wasn't that big of a contributor. Again, Bruce Bowen, all those championships, he got Kobe. He would guard Kobe numerous times. He would guard all those guys, switch on, you know, different fellas. So I think he played a direct role in that. Ori, I think he played a direct role in that. And again, you know, the part that you mentioned that they really changed the future of it, Ori made Coach Pop's job so much easier that, again, Pop tried to duplicate it. Mm-hmm. You know, who did he bring in to sort of fill that Ori role? Matt Bonner. Mm-hmm. They would try to run that same stuff. And, of course, you know, you can't really replace Ori. Go watch that stuff during his Spurs tenure. I mean, he did the little stuff that we're missing right now. So, you know, guys like that I think should get their number retired, even though the guys might come in and want to take their number. I think that's – I really don't pay attention to that. I think you could have two number sixes retired or two 21 – no, not even 21. I think that would be sacrilege in San Antonio, right, before I get the hate tweets. But, you know, maybe a 12, retire three number 12s. I think that's okay because I think each one had their story. So, I personally don't mind that. I think, you know, the guys that helped the Spurs win those championships should really play that role.
You know, I know it's not a Robert Ory segment, but that guy, he has no jersey retired anywhere except Alabama.
The right? Lakers should get off their butts and really, I mean, if they're, I love Shaq. I, you know, personally as a player, most dominant center of all time, mm-hmm. Kobe was great. But if it was not for Robert Ory to stretch that floor, we wouldn't, or hit that game winning shot against the Kings, right. That we would not be talking about a three-peat for the Lakers. So absolutely. Everywhere he went, I think he should get his jersey retired.
Well, you know, in Houston, they were trying to get rid of him as soon as he was there, right? For Sean Elliott, actually. So, you know, they're kind of linked, but you know, he was a star on that team, was there. He was their Kawhi Leonard, right? Just explosive, could shoot, could D a little bit. He was their Kawhi at that time. And then, so wins a couple of titles there, goes out to LA, wins three titles there, comes to San Antonio, wins two titles there. The dude's just a winner, got more titles than anybody else in the modern era. Yeah, you're right. I don't know, have this turn into a Robert Ory segment. This was supposed to be a Tim Duncan thing. So, yes, Robert Ory, too, should get up there in the rafters. But, you know, Tim Duncan had a great, you know, great speech last night. I can't believe he was wearing a sport coat. That's a pretty amazing, amazing thing. And he was animated more than I thought he would ever be, more than I could imagine. You see Popovich choking back tears. Just an amazing, amazing ceremony, amazing night. Man, it would have been so cool to have been inside of the arena. But I was in San Antonio last night and I was StubHubbing it, and it's $450 to basically touch the ceiling in that place, $450. So that was a little bit out of the old budget, but. Looked like an amazing night. What were your takeaways from the speech and the whole presentation?
The presentation I thought was, I think if it was anybody else in any other team, I think they would have gone over, you know, overdone it. But I think for Duncan, this was perfect. It was just guys talking about, you know, who he was, who he is, you know, what he brought to the court, how he impacted, you know, their lives. I think it was really a ceremony meant for Tim Duncan. If it was for LeBron, I think people would say, well, you could have done more for him. You know, it was same thing with Kobe. But with Tim Duncan, I think it was perfect. The one thing I got out of that, you know, and if you notice this, when Parker talked, when Ginobili talked, when Pop talked, and also his high school college coach, they all talked about the same thing. They didn't bring up points. They didn't bring up rebounds or records or anything. They talked about what kind of person he was. Mm-hmm. You know, the humbleness that he
still with
well,
us.
I mean, on the court, you know.
Right.
But you know, it really gets you to think how much of really the roles that the family plays, because again, that, you know, everything they talked about goes back to his parents. You know, they brought him up a certain way, respectful way, listening. And I mean, he would still voice his opinions, but I mean, he wouldn't get in coaches' faces and all that. I mean, he really has that, had that hunger to learn as a player. And you know, for anybody who listened, that, you know, if you have kids who play basketball, or if you're a basketball player, or you're a coach, that's who you want to have on your team, a Tim Duncan, you know. And again, that's that trickle down parenting. That again, that's what made Tim Duncan special. If you didn't have that childhood, or you know, that if he wasn't parented the way that his parents, you know, brought him up, he wouldn't be that player. And it really, it felt great when Pop said, you know, because it was a promise that he made to his dad, right? Where his father, Tim Duncan's father, told him, you know, when he's done with all this, I want him to be the same man he is right now. And Pop, you know, said he lived up to that promise. You know, that, I mean, that's the one thing that makes the Spurs special out of any other organization. They treat each other like family, and they treat each other in a special way. So, I mean, that's when you see teams and you see rumors that, you know, this team wants to be like the Spurs and so forth, it's not the coaching style. It's not who they want to bring in. That's what every team, every organization should strive to be that family oriented, caring about everybody. And again, that best player on the team being wanting to be treated like any other player. I mean, that just makes everything so special. There's not going to be another Tim Duncan, and that's the only depressing part about that. But I mean, we should be glad that we had the opportunity to see that, to live through that, and be a part of that special era.
Well, there is absolutely nothing I can add to that. That was great, Jose.
Can talk about Robert Horry.
No, I mean, there's nothing else to say. It's just an amazing night for a guy who's meant so much, not just to that particular team, but what he's meant to the area, because that team means so much to San Antonio. And, you know, the characteristics of San Antonio, very family oriented, really, you know, that's what influenced the Spurs to be that way too. But it would not have come to pass if it wasn't for a player like Tim Duncan, who would take the coaching from Popovich, as you mentioned. And that example allowed guys like Tony Parker, who's, you know, a phenom in his own right, been playing professional basketball since like 15 years old, right? So he is a phenom. All those other guys who – think of it, all the players that – Steven Jackson was a part of this team, man. You know, Michael Finley, who was a star during his time there in Dallas, Bill, he was a part of this team. You have all of these guys that come in. Robert Horry won multiple championships. And they see that Tim Duncan takes the coaching, that he buys into what Popovich says. Tim Duncan's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest at any position of all time, but certainly the best power forward of all time. And he's doing whatever this coach tells him to do, and is hustling and all of those things. And he doesn't have to, but he is. And they feed off of that. And that's how you get that team game to really come to the forefront, and how the Spurs style of play has resulted in five titles, and you know, they've competed for several others. So and they're seemingly always in the running. For 20 years they've been in the running. So I think it's just an amazing night, but it really it bookends that career. And you know, now it's, I mean, if it wasn't over before, it's definitely, you know, moving forward, you know, Tim Duncan's in the rear view mirror for San Antonio, and that just feels very strange. So, with that, let's close it out. That's it for this episode of the Spurs Cast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter @TheSpursCast. Catch up with Jose @JRG2023. And me, Ryan MC_PS, or any of the Project Spurs folks @Project Spurs. Jose, thank you. And to you listeners, you are welcome.